Time now for The Watch List, our guide to the best TV and film for the week ahead. And I'm joined today by Irish Times arts journalist Nadine O'Regan and film critic at the Business Post, John Maguire. Welcome, guys.
Morning, Brendan. How
morning.
Nadine, what is Vladimir? I believe you've got a sneak preview of it. It's coming to Netflix on Thursday. Sounds really good.
It's one of those kind of short, 30-minute long sort of series. It's I think it's an 8-parter and
self-contained.
Yes,
excellent.
And it stars Rachel Weisz as a literature professor who speaks directly to the camera. She's been with her college for decades. She's bored, annoyed with life. Her husband, they're in an open marriage, but her husband, John, who's played by John Slattery of Mad Men, has been he's been censored by the college for having affairs with young women on campus. And both, you know, the couple knew about this because they were in the open marriage, but it hasn't changed the fact that her life is now incredibly complicated and she's extremely annoyed at social events and the like. So she speaks directly to camera, she tells us about this, and then into her world sashays Vladimir, played by Leo Woodall, who a lot of people would know. A lot of people would know him from The White Lotus, Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy. And he comes in, he's you know, he's good looking, he's charming, he's a lot younger than her, and suddenly she's all a flutter. So it's
okay.
One of those.
We're loving this, are
yeah,
we?
Yeah. It's very Moorish.
Okay, Vladimir starting Thursday on Netflix. John, you've picked this new crime drama, DTF St. Louis on Sky and Now TV from tomorrow. Is it good?
Is it good? Yeah. Well, you ask your teenager now or your 20-something what the DTF stands for in the title. This is
okay. Did I say something rude?
No. Okay. A little bit. Okay. Yeah, kind of. In initials, maybe not. But this is a black comedy, very inky black comedy murder.
Oh!
Yeah,
okay.
Did you look it up?
That took me a minute.
Oh, you figured it out.
Yeah.
Set in the Midwestern city of St. Louis, Jason Bateman plays a local kind of micro celebrity. He's a weatherman who forms a friendship with his new sign language interpreter, who's played by David Harbour, and especially with his wife, who's a sales rep, played by Linda Cardellini. They're bored with their lives, middle-aged, middle class. They're oblivious to the kind of privileges that they have. So one of them convinces the other to sign up for a new dating app for local swingers, and they set about investigating this kind of casual sex scene with fatal consequences for one of them. And at the same time, Richard Jenkins and Joy Sunday play the cops that are investigating this. It's a really interesting story based on a real life case, based on something that actually happened.
And Jason Bateman is completely having his best year ever.
I was about to say, the cast.
Who knew this guy was going to turn into such a legend in middle age?
It is really interesting.
It's
even
weird
Adam
and
removed,
kind of intriguing, isn't it?
Very much.
Excellent.
The way they've structured the story is really interesting.
Okay, DTF, St. Louis on Sky and Now TV from tomorrow. Nadine, Home of the Year is back on RT1 TV this Tuesday at 7 and on the RT player. And the late Hugh Wallace had filmed this before he died.
Yes, yeah? And it's, you know, it's been aired with the blessing of his family. And, it is strange watching it. I've watched one episode in preview. It's, as usual, an incredibly inviting, compelling show where Hugh Wallace and Amanda Bone and April and the Bear, Siobhan Lamb, are going around to different houses and looking at the decor, looking at the architecture. And it's a charming show. But of course, there's an added poignancy now because Hugh Wallace died in December.
But you know what? What would Hugh Wallace want? Hugh Wallace would want us all to be watching him and thinking about him. I think we can be sure of that. He would enjoy us watching this. So, okay, that's Home of the Year back on RTE1 on Tuesday at 7. John, let's keep this brief. I had some idea the Formula One docuseries Drive to Survive on Netflix would be beneath you.
Oh, absolutely not. No, well, I've got two kids at home who are obsessed with Formula One, and this is now in its 8th season, time to coincide with the first race of the 2026 Formula One calendar, which starts next weekend, I believe, in Melbourne. This is so insightful. It's the peek behind the curtain of this glamorous cutthroat motor race and circus. It's a great watch. The characters are fantastic. It is, in a way, at this is now the 8th season, it's a bit of a victim of its own success, because when it first came out, nobody else was doing this. But the actual media coverage of Formula One, which has grown exponentially since this show started.
Okay.
Now does all this kind of technical analysis and behind the scenes and this peek behind the curtain as part of the normal coverage. So they're following the season, they're following the stories, they pick it out, they edit it absolutely marvellously. The big stories, I suppose, are the battle between Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri for the World Championship. Later episodes, there's only 8 in this season, there's usually 10. There's a portrait of the great pantomime villain Max Verstappen and the unceremonious firing of the hugely successful Red Bull team principal Christian Horner.
That's a bit I've seen on the Daily Mail. There are stories here. And we do feel we're getting it behind the scenes.
And then we get into the car and they've got that coverage as well. So it's great. And it's
Drive to Survive.
Popular brand.
And it's on Netflix now. Nadine, also on Netflix, tell me about Famous Last Words. This is either the best idea for a TV show ever or the worst.
Yeah, it's based on a Danish format, but it's a very, very new premise. It's this idea that a person would be interviewed before their death in a sealed room with one person, cameras all remote, no camera people. And then the interview, which I think the interview actually takes place over 4 hours, but it's edited down to 1 hour. And then it's kept safely and released only after the person's death.
With people who know they're dying.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's Jane Goodall was the first person to be part of this format. But Eric Dane, who passed away recently, the actor who you would know from series like Grey's Anatomy and Euphoria.
Max Dreamy.
He was Dr. Sloan.
I think he might have been Mac Dreamy or Max Dreamy. Max Dreamy, I'm told by my eyebrow producer. Yeah.
So he gives a really affecting interview. And at the very end, like I said, it's just an hour long. There's only one other person in the room. And it's Gwyneth Paltrow's husband is the other person in the room, Brad Falchuk, who's a producer. At the very end, Brad leaves the room and there's 7 minutes where Eric Dane speaks simply directly to the camera, and he addresses his two daughters and he gives some advice for how he hopes that they will continue to live their lives. And he speaks about the importance of friendship, the importance of finding your tribe and finding your path. And it is very affecting.
TV people are monsters, like, and they know what they're doing with this. But at the same time, it sounds like there's an authenticity there that is quite.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I would probably have preferred a different interviewer because the interplay between the two of them is a little bit too saccharine.
Okay.
But having said that, I think a lot of this is based on how invested you are in that particular actor or that particular person who has the floor.
Famous Last Words on Netflix.
The last words are beautifully done.
Okay. John, The Testament of Anne Lee is in cinemas now. This looks wild.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, this is a biopic of a 17th century religious cult leader from Manchester called Anne Lee, but it's told by the writer and director Mona Fassfold as a rapturous musical using the original hymns and dances of the Shakers, as they were known. And it sounds like it shouldn't work, but it absolutely does. It's co-written with her husband, Brady Corbett. That's the pairing that previously collaborated on The Brutalist. And it has a blistering Amanda Seyfried play this impoverished and illiterate young woman who founds the Shakers, who worship through song and dance. They were a celibate.
And tasteful furniture.
And beautiful furniture and design and architecture. And they had this whole holistic thing going on where they wanted to bring creativity as part of a collective group.
Okay.
And all of this is beautifully explained to you. And the story, I mean, they only had $10 million to play with. It looks like a film that cost 10 times that amount of money.
And they managed to tell the story, but also have the musical element.
This is how she folds it in, is beautifully done. And they go from Manchester to America, where she founds a utopian commune somewhere in upstate New York. Seyfried gives the performance of her life, and Fassfold directs the heck out of it. I have an interview with Mona Fassfold in today's Business Post. She's funny and sharp and insightful. And it's just a brilliant big screen, big speaker experience.
Excellent. Okay. Testament of Anne Lee in cinemas now. Nadine, this also sounds like a wild ride. The Great Rose Byrne and If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You is in cinemas now.
This, great title.
This is, I mean, such a film. I mean, a horror story of being a mom, essentially. And it's coming in the wake of, I think, a lot of different sort of literature and articles over the past number of years, including from Claire Kilroy, and then there's Miranda July, who've written about what it feels like to be a mom through fictional guises, but certainly touching on concerns that affect many women. So in this particular story, Rose Byrne plays a therapist called Linda, and she, the camera is on her face the whole time, close up. You never really see her daughter, well, you never see her daughter really till the very end. All you can hear is her voice, and she is a torrent of needs. She needs to be, well, it's both sad and it's sad at sort of immense levels, because there's this human story of this child who's being fed through like a feeding tube that's put in, and she's fed every night because she cannot eat.
Okay.
And then there's this very real story of the superficial angst that comes from just conducting your life day to day, getting her to her doctor, managing the appointments, making it so that Rose Byrne's character, Linda, can get to her own job. And then her husband is away doing his work. And she, you know, she makes the point to him over the phone. She's like, you know, he's like, you have to do this. And she's like, I am doing this, but I am also working at the same time. This is not an even balance. So the performance is extraordinary from Rose Byrne. The story is phenomenally well told. It's written by Mary Bronstein and directed. And honestly, I would urge anyone to watch it, but you will come
it's so
out
stressful.
Like,
okay. It is so stressful.
It is, but it's so good.
John, just briefly, I do want to mention Sirat, which is in cinemas now, which sounds like a really cool film.
Another big screen movie, another big speaker movie. This is an extraordinary drama set in the nomadic rave subculture. Has a Spanish father and son travel to Morocco to attend a rave. They're searching for their daughter and sister who went missing months before at a similar kind of thing. It's overwhelming, the first half of this film, just in terms of noise and spectacle. And then the second half turns into this kind of existential horror movie when they go further into the desert and all sorts of scary and frightening things.
So three wild rides of films this week.
Sirat, okay. Yeah,
in selected
cinemas. It's just that big screen experience that you're looking for, Brendan.
Okay, John McGuire and Nadine O'Regan, thank you so much. That's it for today. You can listen back to all the conversations from today's show on the RTE Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.